last week, the Independent Press Standards Organisation upheld a complaint that you made about The Spectator and an article by Matthew Paris, which took great liberties with the truth about coronavirus fatalities. Well done.
Thank you. It was back in August the 8th, and The Spectator ran this article, as you said, that in which Matthew Paris claimed that millions of people were dying around the world of COVID, which was patently untrue. I wrote to them and thinking they'd just print a correction, sensible thing to do. No, they insisted they wouldn't print a correction, so I complained. I hate complaining to these organisations, but occasionally you have to do it. IPSO, Independent Press, whatever doodah, and it took them 4 months for one word, millions, that was the only word I complained about, took them 4 months. I had lost count of the number of emails. I kept nagging them, and eventually they came to the conclusion that The Spectator had to print an apology because it wasn't millions. I can't see how there could have been any other alternative. But the point here is that people should complain when they see in the press things that are being said that are not true, but which are helping to push along a message that's not true. Then we have to complain about it. We have to protest. We have to make our voices heard, because otherwise it just goes on and on and on, and people still believe the rubbish that they're being told.
Yeah, very good. On that, I've made a couple of complaints as well, and I've not gotten anywhere. It's to do with them not asking or offering me right of reply when the programme has been mentioned negatively in the press about some of the guests, and it was alleged that I was basically a haven for racists and anti-Semites, which is preposterous nonsense. I don't mind people saying stuff like that, but at least do your job and give me the chance to comment. I'm still waiting to hear back, but that doesn't matter. It's not about me. I was delighted to see that IPSO did the right thing. So much to get into today. It seems like, I mean, a week isn't that long a time in, I suppose, in the course of most people's lives, but the old adage is, the old cliche is, it's a very long time in politics. So much has happened since last Monday, not least the announcement today by Hancock that they found a variant. Although he was very quick to point out that the variant, you know, probably that the vaccine will probably deal with the variant, he said, and people shouldn't get too worried about it. What do you think of that?
Yes, well, I think probably my response tells you the answer. But just before I go on to that, but it's very interesting, isn't it? If you and I were doing, if I was coming on your program once a week under normal conditions, we'd say beforehand, well, what are we going to talk about this week? What is the week to talk this week? And look for topics. You don't have to look for topics. They come and hit you in the nose. Everything. I mean, I just don't believe anything. I don't believe anything that Hancock says. I just don't, I'm afraid. I put a request in. I was just sitting by the fire last night, and I put a request into Alexa, and I said, is Matt Hancock a smarmy little bastard? And Alexa said, I'd rather not answer that.
Fantastic.
But I just don't believe anything any of these people say. And maybe there is a variant, but there's variants all the time with the flu. That's the whole point.
Yeah.
And if normally a vaccine for a flu doesn't work if you have a variant, so they have to get a new vaccine. So how come this miraculous wonder vaccine is going to work with the variant as well? I'm sorry, but I seriously don't believe what's happening. The amount of disinformation going on, the amount of defaming, libeling, in an attempt to shut us up. I put a new video on Brand New Tube yesterday, and today it disappeared. And Brand New Tube were desperately trying to find out what had happened. They've been hacked into. And
no way.
I think it's back up again now, but it took them a while to get it back on.
I was going to ask you about the content of that video. during the course of our conversation today. We'll come to that in a moment. You can dig me out of a little hole then, Vernon. Dr. Vernon Coleman is our guest, folks, if you didn't know. Dig me out of a little hole. Listeners say to me, you haven't the courage, Richie, to ask Vernon the question that we want to ask him. I have, I just forget every time. Some of my listeners don't believe in coronavirus. They just don't believe in it. They say it hasn't been isolated. They think it's a nasty old flu strain that's been renamed. And they say, Richie, put that to Vernon, because that's, we feel very strongly about this. What do you think?
I think it probably is. I've said right since March that I thought it was just another flu, an ordinary flu. I said then, and I still believe, that it was never anything like a plague. In fact, the total number of deaths for this year are much the same, in fact, a bit less than a normal year. But all that's happened is that all the flu cases and a lot of everything else has been renamed as COVID-19 deaths. And incidentally, I wish people would stop writing it with capitals. You don't write malaria in capital letters or influenza in capital letters. So why write COVID in capital letters? It just dignifies an ordinary flu thing. I know about all the arguments about whether it's exosomes and whether 5G is triggering it and so on and so forth. Personally, I don't believe there's a special disease called that's a plague, COVID plague. It's a flu. It's a flu variant. But I don't think that the question of what's actually behind it is the key at the moment. I think what we have to be fighting on is what they're doing. Otherwise, we get stuck up in semantics and we get going around following ourselves in circles. What we have to do is try to get out to more people. We have to reach more people who aren't convinced. We have to change views. That's why I keep saying send leaflets around, send videos and copies of books and stuff, the free ones. Send them off to everybody, to journalists, to school teachers, to lawyers, to anybody you can think of who might be a bit of an influencer, because there's a danger that these things will just go round within a small, relatively small group. I know there's a lot of people who think like you and I do and who are aware that this is a hoax and that there's a reason behind it. It hasn't happened by accident. Nothing they do happens by accident. The whole thing's planned and has been planned for years. But the problem is that if we just keep circulating our discontent among ourselves, we will never get out
to the
mass of people who are unconvinced. And there's three layers of people at the moment. There's people who believe this is a hoax. There's people who will believe forever that whatever the government says is true and wonderful and Bill Gates is a magnificent man and so on and so forth. And there's the people in the middle who suspect that there's something fishy going on, who don't really believe what's happening, but in the infamous words that I've heard and seen time and time again, oh, well, I wear my mask because it's easier than making a fuss.
Yeah.
If you don't make a fuss and you wear your mask and you do everything else that they want you to do, then we have lost. And losing doesn't mean just that we lose our liberty forever. It doesn't just mean that we lose all our freedoms of speech and so on forever. It means that we're going to be left with 500 million people on the planet, because that's the plan. That's part of Agenda 21. We have to spread the word as wide and as far as we possibly can. And there are risks. You'll upset people. You might lose a friend or a neighbor. And I would go so far as to say that if you haven't lost someone or offended someone, then you're not doing your part in spreading the truth. Because if we don't do that, we're the ones who have to do it. It's our responsibility. No one else is going to do it. The BBC isn't going to do it. No MP is going to do it. We have to do it ourselves.
Very good point about not getting bogged down in arguments about whether viruses exist or not. The important thing, as you said, is what is being done to civilization, what is being done to humanity. I've got a good friend called Spiro Skouras. He's a journalist and a very responsible journalist, very good lad. And he's got a great YouTube channel with a big following. And he takes his job very seriously. He's very fond of you too. And he just sent me some information from the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. It's kind of extraordinary, really. they've updated their page on the flu. And this is true. I'm looking at it here. As of December the 3rd, 2020, so that's only last week, 10 days ago or so, there's a model used to generate influenza in-season preliminary burden estimates uses current season flu hospitalization data. There probably should be a comma in there somewhere. But anyway, the salient point is reported flu hospitalizations in America are too low at this time to generate an estimate of, in terms of the burden. That's extraordinary information. Isn't it?
Well, it fits in exactly. In the UK, between January and August, there were less than 400 flu deaths. I'm sorry, I shouldn't laugh, but there were less than 400 instead of, 20,000. Where did they go? They were labelled as COVID. They were labelled as COVID-19 because that was more convenient to the people who are trying to sell a plan. Can I go back? I wanted to say something about masks because people sometimes think that they have to wear a mask. Let me just read you the bit from the government's website. There's a bit on my website which links you into the bit on the government website. And what they say is, children under the age of 11, the Public Health England does not recommend face coverings for children under the age of 3. And so that awful scene that you had on your Twitter about the child of 2 who was thrown off an aeroplane because it wasn't wearing a mask.
Yeah.
Often safety reasons, it should not have been wearing a mask. Parents, if they throw your child off or try to make it wear a mask, sue them because they're trying to damage your child's health. Public Health England, the government, says that children under 11 shouldn't have to wear face coverings. It says that you don't have to wear a face covering for any physical or mental illness or impairment or disability, and you don't have to wear one if wearing or removing a face covering will cause you severe distress. So it's very difficult to see why anybody should have to wear a face mask, because I'm sure that most people find that they cause severe distress. The government also says, and I quote, those who have a age, health or disability reason not to wear a face covering should not be routinely asked to provide any written evidence of this. Written evidence includes exemption cards. So the police should not routinely ask you to explain or to provide evidence for why you're not wearing a mask. And everybody can get one of those sunflower exemption lanyards, which most shops now recognize. You can get them from Lloyds Bank, Tesco's, Sainsbury's, Marks, Argos, I think, all sorts of people provide the lanyards. You just stick the government's little exemption card onto the lanyard, and no one can make you wear a mask because that's what the government says. So why people feel that they have to wear a mask is beyond. Of course, some people might like wearing masks. Some people might feel that they don't cause them any distress. Some people might think that they're not going to cause them any brain damage. And if they want to wear their masks, they'd be allowed to. If they want to walk around in Wellington boots full of concrete, then they should be allowed to.
What do you think of what Jonathan Van Tam has been saying? He's been saying that we may very well see a cultural shift in this country, and that in the near future, people who find themselves with a head cold or a throat infection or even a bit of flu, that they will think that they should wear a mask or they should isolate themselves. They should not go into work with a cold or with the flu, or at the very least they should wear a mask. We could see ourselves kind of adopting a kind of a more oriental approach to masks in the near future. He said that, Van Tam, as you know.
Yeah, I don't think that's really got anything to do with COVID, because that all fits in my book. That fits in with the put your hand in front of your mouth if you're going to cough or sneeze way of life. If you've got the bad flu, you don't go into work. I mean, if you feel like it and you can, then you do some work at home. But if you've got the flu, and the difference between a flu and the cold is, as I said decades and decades ago, is if there's a £5 note in the middle of a field, if you've got the flu, you won't go and get it. If you've got a cold, you might. The fact is that that has nothing to do with mask wearing as it is being ordered now. Wearing a mask, if you've got TB or flu or some other disease that can be spread by coughing and sneezing and whatever, is one thing. Wearing a mask when you're completely healthy is another thing, and it's something that's never ever happened before. And it's all part of the corruption of science. I mean, don't forget that Witty and his deputy, whose name escapes me for a moment, both said earlier this year that mask wearing wasn't necessary.
Yeah.
They've all changed their minds. The British Medical Journal had a paper just a few weeks ago, 13th of November, entitled COVID-19, Politicization, Corruption and Suppression of Science. And this was in the British Medical Journal, about when good science is suppressed by the medical-political complex. And they pointed out that politicians and governments are suppressing science now. They're doing it, and people are dying as a result. People are dying because of the incredibly stupid, pointless, and even World Health Organization disapproved of lockdowns. And the number of people who are dying as a result of the lockdowns is sickening. I was going to do a piece in the new year called Remembrance Day about some of the people who have died as a result of what's going on. The total, I remember saying 6 months ago that the total was going to be far, far greater than the deaths from COVID-19. Even the government admitted that the lockdown and so on was going to kill 150 to 200,000
people.
Yeah, that's
right.
Which is infinitely greater than the number of people who've died from this flu, which is what I call it. But if you look at the people who have died because of the lockdowns, and okay, what they do with the people who died from COVID, of course, is that the papers print their pictures all the time. BBC prints their pictures. This person died from COVID. Well, this person probably didn't die from COVID because they're fiddling the figures. But how about some pictures of people who died because of the lockdowns, because of the government, because of the government saying you can't go and treat old people? I've got a pile of things which I've downloaded off the web. There was a woman who was 7 weeks in isolation because of lockdown, and she refused to eat. She refused to take any medicine. There was a 31-year-old woman. I mean, I've got the names of all these. These are real people. She died of cancer because her treatment was delayed because of the coronavirus. I mean, why did they do that? A 17-year-old A-level student killed himself because of the lockdown. He thought that he was going to get rotten marks, and so on and so on.
There's a horrible one in the BBC today. Did you see this? It's a dreadful story. I mentioned it to my first guest, Tony Gosling. It's a story about a gentleman called Sherwin Hall from Leeds. In March, he was feeling very unwell. He was sent away from hospital with antibiotics, but he knew that there was something more going on, and he kept going back to his doctor, and he actually asked for an MRI scan, and he kept asking and asking and asking, and he didn't get one until it was too late, when he was riddled with tumours, God love him, and he passed away. And his family are saying, you know, they're pretty sure that he might still be here had he gotten that necessary MRI scan. Like you said yourself, that's just one story. And when you get a chance in a minute, I don't want to interrupt your flow. I really don't want to interrupt your flow. I get to have my say on my program in my monologues. I want my listeners to listen to you. But there's a very good question coming in from Lula. So when you speak more on that point about people not getting access to healthcare, which is routine or sometimes very important, and they've died, and nobody's mentioning them except you. I know you've more to say on that. We've got some very good questions from our listeners. So, again, yeah, terrible story about that man from Leeds. Terrible story, that.
They're all over the place. And there are hospital departments that have been shut all year since March. Anyone who says, oh, the hospitals are all open, they're lying, because they're not. Not all the hospitals, not all the hospital departments are open. Some are still shut, and I have no idea why. But the number of people, there were 875 people by May 2020, 875 people had committed suicide during lockdown in Nepal. And it goes on and on and on. Many, many teenagers, many children who died because they just couldn't cope with the lockdowns. And of course, the government policy was to let 80-year-olds die in care homes and not treat them. That was the instruction given out to GPs. Don't treat them. And now we're supposed to believe that the government cares so much about them that they want to give them all the vaccines so that they'll all live forever. You know, have you seen, by the way, the list of possible side effects, draft list of side effects from the FDA?
Yeah, it's incredible.
I mean, it just goes on and on and on, from transverse myelitis, of course, myelitis encephalitis, meningitis, seizures, heart attacks, pericarditis, all the anaphylactic things, and the Kawasaki disease, endless diseases which they say, oh, well, it could be, they could, and this is for the flu, something that kills very few people under 60 and even over 80s. Most of them are going to die from something else anyway. And people are all wearing their masks because of this, and bacterial pneumonia is going up. And we're going to be told that's because of COVID-19. It's not. It's because of the masks. We've got the proof of that. I did that little book with all the proof of all the evidence. Evidence, amazing amount.
To their own studies. To their own. And on the masks now, that's one of the questions. Lula, I think I pronounced that right, L-O-U-L-A, Lula. She is a hairdresser and says, Richie, please ask Dr. Vernon, it's mandatory for us to wear masks in my industry, but can we still choose to exempt ourselves? Lots of confusion around the hairdressing business at the moment. What would you say to her?
We can only go by what the government says, and the government says, in settings where face coverings are required in England, there may be different rules for Scotland, because I don't know, because they make their own rules up there, and indeed in Wales, where that's not a rule. In England, and I'm reading now from the government website, in settings where face coverings are required, there are some circumstances where people may not be able to wear a face covering, and this is the list I gave you before about if it causes you severe distress or if you... or to avoid harm or injury or the risk of harm or injury to yourself or others. Well, it's been proven time and time again about the hypoxia and the hypercapnia. So if you wear a mask, you're causing harm to yourself. Now, the question is that if you don't wear a mask in a shop, I know what will happen. The council will come round. So what's got to happen is that somebody says, no, I don't have to wear a mask. I'm wearing a lanyard with an exemption card on it, and that's enough, according to the government. Now, I can't guarantee that the council aren't going to say, no, well, you have to wear a mask. Somebody somewhere is going to have to go to court and say, look, this is what the government says, so I am not wearing a mask. And if your boss says you got to wear a mask, I would suggest very strongly that you point out to the boss that the restrictions in England are that you may not need to wear a face covering if, and then there's that list of things. It's all on a website. There's a link on my website to the government website, because believe it or not, it's not all that easy to find, like the bit from March the, whenever it was, 19th.
Yeah, when they downgraded it.
You know, when they said, oh, it's not all that bad, it's only like the flu. Yeah. March the 19th, a day later, 2 days later, they produced the emergency 350-page bill that they did overnight, that one. Well, that was very difficult to find, and all the mass market media ignored it completely. They've never mentioned it, and yet that was one of the most important, or probably the most important document in the history of this whole fraud, was the one on March the 19th, and people should look at that as well. Again, it's on my website. I'm sorry it's not the most up-to-date website.
No, but it's still easy to navigate. It's vernoncoleman.com, and on the left, once you enter the website, there is a menu. Click on health, and if you click on health, you'll get all of this information. In a moment, I want to ask you about Agenda 21, Agenda 30, the Great Reset. I want to ask you about it in terms of asking people to consider it, Because you make a great point when you say, if we sit around on radio shows talking about how shite everything is, it might make us feel better for a minute, because at least we know we're not alone, but ultimately it doesn't do anything. You make a very good point, but I want to talk about trying to get people to understand this, because I had a very interesting encounter today with Paul Ripley, the man who runs Fab Radio in Manchester, a great man and a great friend of mine, and he always will be, but he doesn't buy any of it. I want to get into that in a minute and let you take over. But Charlotte asks a brilliant question. Why do, because you mentioned the side effects, FDA, why call them side effects when they're clearly just simply effects? Is it a way of fluffing the term up for the masses? What do you think?
No, the effects that you get from a drug that aren't the main purpose of the drug have always been called side effects. There's a word which I've always liked, which is iatrogenesis, which means that somebody's been made ill by the treatment that they've received. And even before this hoax started this year, one in six people in hospital were there because they'd been made ill by a doctor, most of them because of side effects of drugs. A side effect is simply an effect that nobody wanted or didn't give you they don't give you a drug so that you get an anaphylactic shock reaction. They give you the drug for some other purpose, but the anaphylactic shock reaction is a side effect because it's not the effect they wanted. And incidentally, something else just occurs to me, talking about the 80-year-olds who are having these vaccines dumped into them. The vaccine wasn't tested on 80-year-olds, of course. It was tested on mainly healthy people under 50, I think.
You're right.
Pretty sure that's right.
Yeah.
And of course, most of them would not have, most possibly all of them would have not have been taking heavy duty prescription medication, which is what sadly most 80-year-olds
have. Angina, are. Diabetes. Absolutely. Yeah. The list goes on. Heart problems. Yeah.
Yeah. Whether or not they need it, they'll be taking tons of drugs. You have this pill to stop the side effects of that pill, which you're having to stop the side effects of that pill, and so on. Now, they never tested, and they don't, to see what happens when you have a vaccine and you're already taking drugs for heart disease, respiratory disease, cancer or whatever. So all these thousands of elderly patients who are already taking lots of very powerful drugs are now being given a vaccine about which we know very, very little and which has an enormous range of possible side effects, possible, according to the FDA. How is anybody going to know? What they're going to say, of course, is, oh, well, they died because they were 85. They're not going to say they died because of the vaccine. And last week, I suggested how we could know how dangerous the vaccine is. And I say it again, because this is the simple, cheap way to do it. You find you make a list of 20,000 people who've had the vaccine, and you find 20,000 people of a similar age who haven't had the vaccine, and every 3, 6, 9, 12 months you check to see how many illnesses they've developed and how many have died. And that will tell you whether the vaccine is more dangerous than not having the vaccine, or at least it will tell you how many people are being killed by the vaccine. And at the end of 12 months you'll be able to see, well, look, all these people, far more people died who'd had the vaccine than died when they haven't had the vaccine. And research like that has been done time and time again with children. And there are loads of papers out there which suggest very, very much, and we need more research like this, but do suggest that unvaccinated children may be healthier than vaccinated
children. You sent me a link to a recent study, and I got in touch with the people behind it. Dr. Paul Thomas, California, Integrative Pediatrics, is the gentleman. He's very well known. And he did this study, and he found, exactly as you told me on last Monday's programme, he found that the unvaccinated children were healthier. That gentleman has been suspended. He's had his medical licence suspended. And that happened last week, would you believe? Did you know that?
Yes, I did.
Yeah.
They also arrested a French doctor put him in a mental hospital. I think that's the third or fourth who's been put into a mental hospital.
This is tyranny.
We're going back to Galileo, Semmelweis. We're going back to the times. We're going back to the Middle Ages when you're not allowed to discuss anything. And I repeat that British Medical Journal paper where they said that science has been politicized. That there isn't any science anymore. It's all. I mean, the MHRA, about which I spoke last week, the people who gave the authority, having received just under £1 million from Bill Gates' foundation, and having given them the authority to use the vaccine, back in 23rd of October this year, they were searching for supplies. One of their objects was a MHRA urgently seeks an artificial intelligence software tool to process the expected high volume of COVID-19 vaccine adverse drug reactions and ensure that no details from the adverse drug reactions text are missed. So at the end of October, they were looking for some software so that they could process the side effects from the vaccine, which they okayed. Did they get their piece of software? Have they got their software? Are they using it? What the devil is going on? The Cabinet Office has a fake news unit, which, as you know, exists to allegedly to shut up people like me. But I think that what they're doing is they're just putting out fake news. The world has become utterly mad. There was a petition that the government rejected the other day to reevaluate the NHS criteria for publicly recording a positive COVID-19 test result, because the NHS cycle threshold is 40. And studies have shown that if the PCR cycle threshold is over 35, then the test's pretty useless. And do you know what the government response was? They rejected the petition because this is about something that the UK government or parliament is not responsible for. So who the hell is responsible for it? What is it? Aston Villa Football Club deciding about the number of PCR cycles? The government says it's not them. Well, who is it then? Are you doing it? Is it me? I don't think it's me. It's mad. It's absolute madness. They're denying all responsibility for everything they do. There was an MP the other day, I can't remember his name off the top of my head, who said that the government is not trying to suppress people who are disagreeing with its views. No. Oh, golly gosh, there's a surprise. You and I both know that if you put this program on YouTube, it'll be down before you've managed to make a piece of toast. Just about everything. The video with 100 doctors. No, they weren't all doctors. There were 100 people who were saying how bad everything was. I was in it, but there were 99 other people in it, till I can mention it. But
qualified men and women, some doctors, some scientists. You're absolutely right.
Doctors, whatever.
Yeah.
And that was put on YouTube.
Gone.
Bam. Within the day. I think it lasted several hours before they noticed it. Maybe they were all having, maybe they were down, or all having a party or something. The madness is endless. The madness is endless, and we have to share. We have to fight the people. You know that 2-year-old on the plane that you put on your Twitter?
Yeah, the young, it was a terrible story that kicked off a United Airlines plane because a 2-year-old was crying.
I managed to look at that, even though I'm banned from Twitter. I somehow managed to see it. But there was a reply. The top reply on the Daily Mail to that this afternoon was to the effect that, well, the parents should have got the kid accustomed to wearing a mask. And that was the top top response on the Daily Mail. And there were over 5,000 thumbs up to it. So that couldn't have been just the 77th Brigade. They haven't got 5,000 thumbs between them.
Well, that leads me into something I want to get into before we run out of time today. But before we do that, and that is, how do you get people to consider that the virus, whatever it is only the excuse to transform civilization and the way we live. And before we do that, you brought up the MHRA, the regulatory body in this country. Its CEO is a woman called June Rain. And she gave testimony to the Common Science Select Committee the other day. And in that, she was asked the question and gave, I thought, a startling answer. Now, sometimes I think things are startling, and I think things are big, and you don't think they're so important, but maybe you'll think this is important. She was asked about what is the basic role of the MHRA, and her answer, I thought, was very telling.
I wonder if you would mind just explaining to us, for completeness of the evidence that we're gathering, the importance of the role of the MHRA in allowing medical products and devices to come into use.
Our role is to, in a nutshell, enable access, but the evidence that we require...
She says our role is to enable access, and then she went on to say, but we do require evidence to support the claims made by the companies. And I just thought that was rather an extraordinary thing for her to say. I would have thought the first thing she would have said was, our role is to protect the British public from harmful medicines. But she said it's to enable access.
I would have expected her to say our role is to make sure that medicines that are made available to the British public are effective and safe.
Yeah.
That's it, not access. Access is when you help somebody outside to come in.
Yeah.
And that's what I get from that, and I'm not in the slightest bit surprised. I mean, this woman's organisation accepted £980,000 from the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation.
Yeah.
Now, it's bad enough when the BBC and The Guardian do financial deals, but why are bits of the government accepting money from Bill Gates? Don't we pay enough tax? What the devil's going on? That was the most lunatic thing I've seen in many, many years of writing about doctors, drug companies, medical establishment, corruption, and so on and so forth. You said, how do we tell people outside, want of a better phrase, if you call what we do the resistance movement, how do you tell people outside that what's happening is a fraud? First, you tell them that in March, the government agreed, the government's advisory committee on pathogens and so on, agreed that the coronavirus that causes COVID-19 is in the same category as the ordinary flu. The second thing is that worldwide, the flu can kill 650,000 people a year. And if you look at the figures for the coronavirus for COVID-19, you'll find that it's no worse than the flu, and governments all around the world have admitted that they've exaggerated the figures. In the UK, what they did was for ages, they said, I can't remember how many days it was, 40, 50 days, if you had a positive test for the coronavirus and you died within, now it's 28 days. If you have a positive test for the coronavirus today and you don't have any symptoms whatsoever, none, no symptoms of having the flu or any other respiratory problem, and you get run over by a bus on Thursday, I'm very sorry about that, but if you get run over by a bus on Thursday, what you died of is COVID-19.
COVID, yeah.
If you have prostate cancer and you test positive, and they're testing people when they're going to hospital, so not nearly everybody's getting tested, and as almost every doctor in the world who doesn't work for a government will tell you, the tests, the way they're being done, is absolutely useless because they're picking up more false positives than positives. If you, the person goes into hospital with terminal prostate cancer, and they go in to be looked after, they have a test, it comes up positive, bang, they died of COVID-19. That's another COVID-19 death that wasn't. The number of people who have been put down as COVID-19 deaths, but when they had some other more serious long-standing comorbidity in this country, in America, in Italy, everywhere around the world that I know of, the governments have admitted that they have been effectively fiddling the figures. But even allowing for the fiddled figures, they don't get any higher than the flu. Because if you add, I don't know what the current figure is, the rolling figure for COVID-19 deaths in the world at the moment, but I repeat, the flu season goes from October to the end of April, usually. A flu season, you would expect up to 650,000 people to be dead of the flu. What they're doing now with COVID-19 is they're running a running total. In other words, they didn't stop at the end of April and say, oh, well, we must stop now and see, we compare that with the flu. They're just letting it run.
Yeah,
and in 10 years' time, 3 million people will have died of COVID. And they can say, oh, look, all these people have died of COVID. Oh, gosh. When in fact, of course, more than that would have died of the flu if they'd been allowed to put flu on a death certificate. Again, I say, between January and August in the UK, the number of people who died from the flu was under 400 officially. In Australia, if I added up the figures for COVID and flu. If you add last year's COVID and flu mortalities in Australia together, you get almost the same figure as you get for this year. It's just that the figures have changed. There were lots of flu last year and no COVID, of course, and this year there's hardly any flu and lots of COVID, but it comes to the same number. And nobody seems to say, good golly, that's amazing. I don't see how anybody who's a doctor, a teacher, anybody who's got two brain cells to run together can't see what a con this is. Just look at the statistics.
Look at the numbers, yeah. They're saying today that we've had 72.4 million cases globally since it began, and that has led to 1.61 million deaths, they're saying.
Right, well, within the April to the end, October to the end of April flu season, they can get 100 million. So that's 100 million.
Jesus.
If you add together, we're well over... we're well over the year now for flu, so the flu and COVID number of deaths are probably about the same, even allowing for the fact that they have fiddled the figures and admitted they've fiddled the figures. The total number of people who've got COVID is less than the number of people who would in that same period be expected to have contracted the flu. So it doesn't really stand up to much of a pandemic that's worth closing down hospitals, allowing people to die of cancer, closing down operating theatres, closing down the economy, which will result, this isn't about money. If you close down the economy, it's proven time and time again that the number of deaths will go up dramatically because people can't afford food, they can't afford to heat themselves, they can't afford... Do you know 60,000 old people die every winter in the UK of the cold? Because they can't afford to heat their homes.
Yeah.
60,000. That's more than have died of COVID in Britain. Do they say, oh, this is terrible, 60,000 old people dying from the cold, we must do something about that? Well, what they do is they give them 200 quid a year each, which will probably pay for a one-bar fire for a week, the way that electricity companies are going. And nobody cares about that. It's just 60,000 old people died of that. Well, most of the people who've died from COVID are old people, but because they've died of COVID, then suddenly it's very important. We've got to shut down the country and kill 200,000 people plus with the lockdowns, which are going to...
At the very least. Next time, I mean, let's hope we... Next Monday would be the last one of 2020. I hope you'll be with us next Monday unless you've got pre-Christmas things going on. But I'd like to explore next week... Because ultimately, you see, you're right. When you say, Richie, people should point out all those very easy to discover facts. You made some great points. But they still won't listen. They still come back and they say, why? And that's
right.
When you're left with the great reset and why they really want to do that. And I think we should explore that next Monday if you're up for that, because we've only got about 30 seconds now before we've got to wrap it up. What do you think?
Okay, I was going to have a couple of weeks, but yes, okay.
We'll have a couple of weeks. We'll pick it up in January. It's not going anywhere.
That's a point. The very, very quickly, the billionaires, Gates and co, got very, very rich. They made, I don't know how many tons of billions of pounds. What's happening is the global reset is changing everything. It's changing healthcare, it's changing education, it's changing economy. They want to destroy small businesses so that big businesses can take over. The big business is owned by the billionaires. They want to shut shops, they want to shut pubs. It's all in the Agenda 21, the plan for the 21st century, based on a completely fake climate change nonsense, the fraud of climate change, because we've got to do all these things to save the planet, which is total rubbish. You don't need to do anything to save the planet. It's doing fine, thank you very much. The nature always changes weather. None of these things are we allowed to talk about because it's all banned. We aren't allowed to mention any of these things. The BBC decides that the science has all been decided. Prince William's decided that the science has all been decided. They don't know what they're talking about. And they don't even know, probably, that the plan, the Agenda 21 plan that originated with the United Nations, is the foulest plan in history. They want to take over everybody's life, and they want to reduce the world population. You can check all this out on
it's
the
all
internet.
True.
They want to reduce the world population to 500 million, which is about 6.5 billion less than it is at the moment. And you look at the number of people like Prince Charles, Prince Philip, Boris Johnson, Bill Gates have all said there's too many people on the planet, and what are we going to do with them? Well, I can tell you what's going to happen. They're going to die.
We'll pick it up again in January then. While we've got 15 seconds left, thanks so much for spending some time with us on this program in the last few months. Really appreciate it. I do, but our listeners do as well. They're incredibly fond of you, and they love watching you on brandnewtube.com. And go into the website, VernonColeman.com. So, Merry Christmas to you and yours, Dr. Vernon Coleman. Thanks for your time this year. It's greatly appreciated. Words are cheap, but it is appreciated. And I look forward to speaking to you again in the new year.
Thanks, Richie. It's been an honour to be on the programme. Best radio programme that exists beyond doubt. Happy Christmas to you and Caroline, and all the very best to the people listening in.
Thanks so much, Vernon. The great Dr. Vernon Coleman. Go to VernonColeman.com. It's brandnewtube.com.